Good afternoon. I'm here with Mikey V of NBADraft.net for another Sean Mo Hoops podcast. This is Mike's third time coming on. How are you doing today, Mike?
Doing very well, Sean. How about yourself?
Can't complain. We just had a fun weekend and week of college basketball. So excited to talk about some of the action we saw and some of the events that occurred. But I guess we'll just kick things off with the NCAA releasing their preliminary bracket, which is a thing they started last year, basically releasing their top 16 seeds, so 1 through 4 in the four brackets. And this year, with about a month left, they have Virginia as the overall number one seed, along with Villanova, Purdue, and Xavier. In addition to those, Cincinnati, Duke, Kansas, Auburn are the twos. And then you had some threes such as Clemson, which I will be surprised if they're there at the end, as well as Texas Tech, North Carolina, Michigan State. How do you feel about the top four seeds at this point in time, being Virginia, Villanova, Purdue, and Xavier?
I think that's fine. Not really a lot to complain about with those four. I think Michigan State beating Purdue kind of makes that a little strange at this point, especially since Michigan State was, I guess, Purdue was 3 in the polls and Michigan State was 4. So, yeah, that seems a little strange, but I would not be surprised at all to see, like, Michigan State as one of those four at the end. I'm a little surprised Ohio State is as low as they are, but, again, I guess that's probably conference play. And yeah, otherwise, not terrible, but I don't think that's necessarily what's going to stand when the tournament bracket comes around.
So were you excited to see this come out, or did you kind of laugh and dismiss it?
I, for one, like, just think it all this bracketology and stuff is a little ridiculous to me. You know, because there's so much of the season left to play, like, you know, you see a team like Joe Lunardi has Washington as a play-in game 11, and they come into Oregon and lose to both Oregon and Oregon State. And so that changes things quite drastically. And then, you know, you have like UCLA out of the field and they beat Arizona. So they're probably back in it. So there's still so much to be done. And yeah, like there are teams that could be ranked at 4 or 5 right now that could definitely shoot right up the charts, and then you know, vice versa, there are teams that are ranked 4 or 5 right now who might not be for real. Like Auburn is a 2 and Clemson is 3. Even like, you know, Tennessee is a 4 and they just lost big to Alabama. So yeah, you know, I guess it's just something to do in the meantime. What about you?
I mean, I think it shows how wide open the field is. Pretty much all these teams lost or have lost recently, with Villanova getting upset at home to St. John's, who hadn't won a game in Big East, and then in back-to-back beat Duke, and then Villanova in back-to-back games. And then you had UVA losing at home to Virginia Tech in overtime, Purdue losing both the games during the week to Ohio State at home, and then Michigan State. And then you had Xavier, who had an extremely close call with Creighton on the road. So, you know, I think, you know, a lot of teams won't be in this position. There's 4 to 5 games left in the regular season, and then conference tournament play starts. So, you know, we'll see once a team rattles off a few games in the conference tournament, they'll probably be getting a lot of publicity, i.e. Duke last year when they went from finishing, I don't know, 5th or 6th in the ACC to having Gary Parrish and Seth Davis clamor for them to be a 1 seed. So there'll be a lot to change. Yeah. I didn't really pay too much attention to it, but I guess interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. You know, early prelim.
Yeah. So, you know, this week was supposed to be rivalry week. So there's a lot of good action, conference action that went on. You know, one game that I watched yesterday or on Saturday, Purdue, Michigan State. And that'll probably be one of the few Big Ten games I watch, just given I'm not a huge fan of the level of play in that conference. But Purdue and Michigan State was a lot of fun. Came down to Miles Bridges hitting a last-second three-pointer to give the win to the Spartans. But overall, it was a good game. And I think those two teams can or have the chance to go go pretty far in the tournament, more so than any other teams in that conference. But were there any games that you watched this week that, caught your eye or got your attention?
That was one of the big ones for me as well. Yeah, and the funny thing was that it seemed like Nick Ward got hurt early. So, you know, he was kind of the guy that was being asked to guard Big Isaac Haas. And then Gavin Schilling came in and did a very good job there. Purdue's just like a really solid team. They just, their starters are very good. They have that freshman Harms off the bench too, who is like a, you know, defensive presence and does a little bit of offense as well. Like another like big, except maybe lighter on his feet than an Isaac Haas, though not as offensively viable at this point. But yeah, that very interesting. Like that, you know, Purdue has been as good as they have been, and they'll be a tough out. Michigan State, I think, is still to me one of the favorites to probably win in March. Just a really solid team, and they play really well defensively at times. Also, they can shoot. And they have a bit of depth, particularly at the forward spots. But, you know, when you get a guy like Matt McQuaid hitting some shots, too, off the bench, that's really big for them. And otherwise, what were some of the other games? Well, one of the big rivalry games I kind of wanted you to address is Duke versus North Carolina. So what did you get out of that matchup?
I mean, that was a pretty fun one to watch, obviously, with UNC winning. But in the first half, it looked like Duke was going to run away with it. They were pretty much unstoppable on offense. They had the huge size advantage with Bagley and Carter down low, and they were hitting threes. And I think they got up 12 in the first half and were pretty much scoring at will. So they were up 12, but really let the lead slip away in the final few minutes and only went into the half up a few points. And then UNC came out at the start of the second half and really took it to Duke, going on a huge run to kind of swing the scoring edge and the momentum. And they were able to hold on despite some ugly shooting in the final 10 minutes. But, you know, to me, it just you can look at the rankings and, you know, Duke's defense was absolutely atrocious. You know, UNC kind of got away from how they normally play of a kind of a standard half-court offense, and they were looking to really take anybody off the dribble just given Duke's poor effort. And I think Grayson Allen, that was one of the worst defensive efforts I'd seen from anybody this year. You know, and I also thought Duke didn't really do a good job of giving the ball to Bagley or Carter down low. So I guess I was initially surprised by how the second half went, but definitely a good win for UNC, who followed it up with a road win at NC State, especially after, you know, it was just a week or so ago that they were struggling, losing three straight in the conference.
Yeah, that NC State win seemed really big as well.
Yeah, especially after losing to them at home, letting them just in that game, UNC could not cover the 3-point line to save their lives, and they did a lot better job on Saturday, but also, you know, they were able to once again kind of take advantage of the mismatches, and they had Barry playing at a high level early on, and then Luke May just put up, you know, crazy numbers. I think it was 33-17, going for, I think it was 26 in the second half, and just absolutely obliterating Omar Yurtseven, who's NC State's big setter. So yeah, definitely another good win for them, and they have Notre Dame Monday night. So really three games in 5 or 6 days. So hopefully they'll avoid a letdown. But one thing, when I was watching the Duke game in the second half, Duke actually put out a lineup of Bagley, Carter, and my boy Marquise Bolden, another 7-footer that was a top ranked player.
Yeah. I had heard they were going to use that lineup, and I was very much against it. But I'm guessing it didn't do well.
You know, the funny thing is, I don't think I don't know what the plus minus was when they were in the lineup. Offensively, they didn't take a 2-pointer, which is counterintuitive to putting three 7-footers in the lineup. And I think Wendell Carter actually hit a three, but yeah, they really didn't take advantage of it on offense. And then, I mean, defensively, it was just a disaster having seven-footers try to chase around, you know, basically a UNC team that went small with Luke May at the five and Theo Pinson at the four and Cam Johnson. So defensively, it didn't help. I will say that despite all the criticism I've given, Marquise Bolden came in the first half and he showed a flash of why he was the top recruited big man in his high school class, scoring with a left-hand hook and off the dribble. So he had a few minutes where he looked really good. And I think today he got some more playing time against Georgia Tech in a win with Bagley out. But, you know, for Duke, it's one, learning how to play defense, and two, trying to establish some depth with all those McDonald's All-Americans.
Yeah, and I don't know, call me crazy, but I still think Duke has to be one of the favorites to win the NCAA tournament this year. I know how much they've struggled defensively. I thought shooting was going to be an issue with them as well. But yeah, they're really talented, and they're going to be a really, really tough out. I think they've just kind of taken their lumps on the road for the most part. I know they had like a few home losses as well, and then the loss to St. John's was at the time inexcusable until St. John's beat Villanova, and then they beat Marquette on Saturday as well. Like, Shamari Pons is playing out of his mind right now. And then, you know, they're getting a couple of the other role guys like Justin Simon and Bashir Ahmed, like, to play really well also. But, yeah, just a few other games I watched. I watched some Villanova-Butler, and Villanova was playing without Eric Pascal, and one of their other starters was hurt as well. God, why off the top of my head can't I remember this? But, yeah, so they were down a couple starters, and they still ended up doing pretty well in the game. And the first half, Butler was their first loss of the season, and they were playing them really well. Keelan Martin, for one, had a really good game. And then
Jamar Baldwin.
Yeah, he really is. He's like a great college four. And yeah, just a really tough player. He was, when I watched PK80, he was the guy who kind of brought Butler back in the game against Ohio State. And the game they ended up winning in overtime.
Yeah, and I mean, then, he's a guy that has, you know, been there. I called the Bob Sura All-Stars for somebody that has, you know, you feel like he's been around for 20 years. But,
yeah,
you know, he, as a freshman, I remember him killing UNC in the Maui Invitational way back. And this is definitely a while ago. And then over the wintertime, I got to watch him kill Georgetown at Georgetown. So that guy's been around a while, and, you know, he put up 30 against Villanova. And I think if, you know, once they announce those 3-on-3 teams for that tournament they're doing during the Final Four weekend, I think the Big East will be the favorite, and I'm hoping he'll be on it.
That would be great. I watched
quick question for you. I know Gus Johnson was announcing that game, and Dante DiVincenzo, the 6'5 sophomore, had a career high 30 points. But
yeah, 30, yeah, as well.
So Gus Johnson kept calling him the Big Ragu. What do you think of that name?
I'll go with it. I'm a fan of Gus. So, you know, anything Gus says, usually it'll sound pretty good. And I think he does a great job calling pretty much anything. Like, you know, started off really liking him as a college football announcer, and he's done a good job with basketball as well. So yeah, like, you know, it wouldn't be my go-to, and like, slightly racist, but, you know, like, at the same time, maybe not racist, but like, still definitely like a sort of a stereotype, I guess. But
yeah.
I'm okay with it. As
Fair
long
enough.
as Dante DiVincenzo is okay with it as well.
Fair enough.
And yeah, the Virginia Tech.
Were there any
Oh,
other
go ahead.
games
Yeah.
you were going to talk about?
Yeah, Virginia Tech, Virginia was a
Yes,
really good one
that
as well.
game was painful, painful to watch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, to me, Virginia is one of the teams that, like, while you can respect what they do, they're just not very fun to watch. And I guess, you know, I don't know. I remember Washington State kind of being fun to watch when Tony Bennett was there. And, like, when he had, like, the three guards that could,
Kyle
like,
Weaver
run every
and
ball.
Who was it, Lowe and
Yeah.
Tyler
Yeah,
Rochester?
yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, yeah, so that I remember that being fun. And I guess there have been some Virginia teams that have been kind of fun. This one I don't find, like, they get the job done. I thought it was really funny how Jay Billis said it was going to be, like, an upset if they didn't run the table in the ACC, which I thought was kind of silly. Maybe I was misquoting him, but I am pretty sure he said that. But, yeah, you know, like, again, this was at home, but, like, on the road in the ACC, you can lose at any time. But, yeah, this being a home game and them just not getting the job done, like, you know, it's kind of to be expected. I think as much as – as great as they are at defense too, they can really struggle to score, and that just leaves the door open for, you know, being beaten if the other team makes a few shots. And Virginia Tech definitely in the first half, like, made some shots that you probably wouldn't think they would have made. Like, you know, guys like Chris Clark and stuff, like hitting a three. And yeah, it was, so that was a really good win for Virginia Tech. Big game for Justin Robinson. And then Nikhil Alexander Walker hit like a big three at the end of the first half as well. So,
yeah, he shot the ball
yeah.
really well. And Robinson played really well until really UVA put DeAndre Hunter on him. And then
yeah.
I DeAndre Hunter, I love. He's that guy is a beast. And the fact that he's only a freshman, I mean, I assume he maybe has two more years left. I don't see him sticking around his whole time, just given his athleticism and talent. But that guy's really good. And, you know, as you were saying, Virginia Tech, I think they dropped, you know, UVA dropped 9 points that game, you know, from their offensive ranking. And usually they run, you know, pretty crisp sets and get good shots. I felt against Virginia Tech, they just resorted to jacking a lot of threes. They shot 23 twos and 38 threes with Guy and Jerome going a combined 4 of 24. So I don't expect to see that again, especially Kyle Guy was taking a lot of tough shots and Tony Bennett
yeah.
UVA, you don't normally see that a lot. Usually it's good shots that they take. So that was kind of out of character for UVA.
For sure. And then the other game I watched was Texas A&M Kentucky. And yeah, Kentucky just continues to show that they're like kind of like a middle of the pack SEC team. They have a lot of talent, but they pretty much like they've struggled on the road, and they kind of keep playing down to whoever they're playing. And Texas A&M has been like a streaky team, but they just had the bodies that really could affect Kentucky. DJ Hogue had a really good game. I saw Wenyen Gabriel just hacking Tyler Davis anytime that guy would get the ball near the basket. And at the end, he had like a huge cut on his shoulder from when Wenyen had tried to foul him like from behind, like when the game was pretty much out of reach, and he got called for a flagrant foul on that one. But yeah, the SEC has been really, really strange this year. But at the same time, I feel like a pretty good conference. But yeah, you know, Kentucky doesn't have their usual stronghold at the top. And I think they dip outside the top 25 yet again after that loss.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even bother watching that game. I've definitely seen Kentucky and A&M numerous times, but did not watch that at all. And, you know, it seems, once again, Kentucky, they're still trying to figure out the pieces and how they mesh together. But at the same time, if they come in as an 8 seed or whatever they may come in, I definitely wouldn't want to be that 1 seed playing them in the second round. I think, you know, Kentucky this year, they had 4 or 5 McDonald's All-Americans that they recruited. Mm-hmm. Obviously not fitting together, but a lot of talent. On Saturday, there was a pretty big piece on ESPN about UConn's fall from, you know, really being one of the top teams in the country of, you know, winning several national championships in the 2000s with Jim Calhoun, who had built the program up, and then Kevin Ollie won a championship his first year afterwards. But, you know, over the past few years, they've been pretty much irrelevant. So the article kind of took an in-depth look at, is Kevin Ollie the right coach, and looked at the recruiting and the fact that they're now in the American Athletic Conference rather than the Big East. And it was funny to me when I went back and looked, Jim Calhoun is in his whole time at UConn only had a total of 7 McDonald's All-Americans. So definitely had a good eye for talent and how that fit together. But I was just curious on your thoughts of UConn and Kevin Ollie, and, you know, will they keep him around, or can they get back to being kind of a dominant team, or are they kind of, will they kind of be in that middle tier status for a while?
Yeah, I'm really not sure. I think that them not being, like, the American Athletic Conference just seems to be a conference that isn't necessarily, like, one of the highlighted conferences out there. And, you know, they adding Wichita State is all well and good. But, it kind of takes away from the fact that UConn doesn't get to play those same schools that they used to. And you wonder if that's one of the reasons why they maybe have had a bit of a fall from grace. That being said, like, it still seems like recruits are at least semi-interested in them. Though I'm not exactly sure what they have coming in next year. But yeah, like, you know, they got like Altari Gilbert was like a McDonald's All-American, and while he's been hurt and hasn't been amazing for them, like, you know, that was still something. They still beat us, which I wasn't incredibly happy about.
Us beating Oregon.
Yeah. They won here at the PK80 in our first game. And I wouldn't move on from Kevin Ollie yet. I don't know. I guess if I'm a diehard UConn fan, I might feel otherwise, but I'd still give him a chance. I feel like, you know, it took John Wooden 16 years to win his first NCAA tournament, and it took Kevin Ollie 1 year. And, you know, I just don't understand necessarily moving on from a coach that quickly. And then, you know, the other thing is, who would you hire? I'd still give them a chance, but yeah, like, they've definitely been disappointing, and it's been a down year for them yet again. But yeah, I just see where it went for a little bit. What about you? What do you think?
I don't know if I would move on. I mean, I just feel bad, and as a college basketball fan, I feel like they should be in the Big East, and anytime I'm watching a Big East game, or even when I, you know, the Villanova UConn game a few weeks ago, and it's just kind of sad that they're not in the conference anymore. And, you know, there are some good teams in the American, Cincinnati, for example, this year, but, you know, when your conference has teams like ECU and Tulsa, Tulane, et cetera, like, it's just not a sexy conference. I just feel bad. They're kind of stuck there when they really should be in the Big East and playing in a strong conference and playing all these natural rivalries that they've had. So I just wish, you know, UConn could either just dump their football team and go back in the Big East, or something could be changed. And that's not even to mention the women's team that is obviously, you know, the top program of all time. And, you know, now they're having to go to these, you know, kind of dumpity basketball schools and play them. So I just wish something could be done. Unfortunately, it won't, but I thought it was a pretty good article on ESPN this Saturday.
I always thought that UConn was looking at, like, the ACC back in the day, too, And I don't know, I might have been wrong there, but I remember when they were talking about like the conference realignment and stuff, like it felt like UConn was one of the teams that was possibly being looked at. And
Yeah,
that would have
no,
been really cool for
they
them.
were. They were,
Yeah.
but Louisville was able to get that carrot to come into the
Damn it,
ACC.
Patino.
And yeah, I mean Patino, I mean I think also their football program, in terms of the ACC
Yeah,
getting
true,
a
true,
little bit
true.
more prestige played a factor. But
Yeah.
yeah, UConn would have been fun, especially with BC and Syracuse in the ACC. But well, question for you. I know we're both out on the West Coast and have been able to go to some games. I got to see St. Mary's play this week. That was at the time number 12. They went on and lost to Gonzaga on Saturday. But you got to watch Oregon play. So I was just curious to your West Coast thoughts on Oregon from and even Washington from watching them this week.
Yeah, I probably picked the worst live game to go to watch Washington. So the amazing part
What was
about
the final
this whole
score?
thing, it was 65-40 Oregon.
Oh.
The first half it was 28-21 Oregon, and I'm thinking to myself, Oregon's been generally a pretty terrible second half team. And so I'm thinking to myself that Washington is going to have like a really nice second half and give us a game. But then they end up scoring 19 points in the second half and we had 37. So yeah, it was definitely a rough game for those guys. They got in a bit of foul trouble, so that was a problem. Like most college basketball teams, they don't really have anybody but a very deep roster off the bench. And their hero from the Arizona game, Dominic Green, only finished with 4 points and wasn't hitting all of his outside shots like he was in their big win the game right before us with their 78-75 buzzer beater against Arizona. Yeah, like Jalen Noel is definitely looked good at times, but he got in foul trouble, turned it over a bunch, had a few air balls, which the crowd went crazy on. The guy who I was kind of disappointed with was Matisse Thybulle, who, I knew was having one of the nation leaders in steals, and I was thinking he'd be more of a focal point on offense, but it just doesn't seem like he has great touch. He had one really nice dunk off the dribble, but that was his only basket. And yeah, he just didn't really seem to bring much on offense. And then the amazing thing too is that Troy Brown, who I felt like kind of lacked some confidence at times, was really, getting to the zone off the dribble. And then even like, playing the high post and making some good decisions. So Troy had a fantastic first half. He had 16 points with 4 minutes left in the first half, finished with 21-5-2. And then it was a really big game for Kenny Wooten, who played great defense against Noah Dickerson, who has been Washington's most consistent post force and has been a really good like Pac-12 five this year. And Kenny finished with 12 points, a bunch of them off lob dunks, five rebounds and seven blocks. And he was just everywhere on defense as well. Like, and switching onto guards, and then playing great post defense. So yeah, it was really great to see him kind of get more in the flow of offense because since Pac-12 play started, he had a few games where he was just kind of a zero there. But he's a tremendous athlete and had a big game there. So yeah, what were your thoughts on St. Mary's Loyola Marymount, Sean?
Yeah, well, for Oregon, they're coming down to Southern California, so looking forward to watching them play on Thursday, especially, Troy Brown, got to see him a lot in high school. Kenny Wooten, I did not, so looking forward to seeing both of those guys along with Paul White, throwback Georgetown transfer, and Whitney Young, Jahlil Okafor's teammate for his 4 years back in the Chicago days. So looking forward to seeing them. But yeah, I got to watch St. Mary's. They played an overmatched Loyola Marymount team in the West Coast Conference, but St. Mary's number 12 in the country. But always fun to go to a small gym and get a good seat and watch, you know, a quality team. I did go to the game. It was right after I had watched the UNC Duke game, and watching that game on TV, then going to watch this game in person, definitely a slight drop off in athleticism. But Jock Landale, who is a senior 6'11 guy, he's the number, I think, 2 rated player in KenPom's index. He's been pretty much amazing all year. He had a strong game, close to a double double. In terms of, he's a kind of a true post player, uses his size and strength down low. And, I think at the next level, he's probably not an NBA guy. I could see him being a 2-way G League NBA guy, maybe at the beginning before going overseas. But, you know, their team was fun to watch. I wasn't surprised when they got blown out by Gonzaga, just given I think Gonzaga has more talent than them. But there was a guy, Jordan Ford, who I didn't really know a whole lot about going in, but this little 6'1 sophomore white guy who was, you know, extremely, extremely quick, and was just kind of getting in the lane, good shooter, 41%, along with their point guard, Emmett Nair, who is definitely one that, a little on the slower side, but extremely smart and one of the top passers in the country. I think he had 11 assists, 1 turnover. So it was a fun game to watch. In addition, I realized after going about 4 or 5 Loyola Marymount games, it took me this long to realize that they had dollar hot dogs. So I got to enjoy, unfortunately, on one of those, but that was one of the highlights of that game.
That's truly what makes basketball great.
In terms of Loyola Marymount, you got to see Gonzaga and St. Mary's, so both of those teams, and we'll get a few more USC games and Pac-12 action, so it's nice to have those in your backyard. But I guess one thing to end it with, since you are one of the draft gurus and staying on the West Coast, I know we were chatting about DeAndre Ayton earlier, so I was just curious, very briefly, your thoughts on him and where you see him going in the draft this summer.
Well, my thoughts on him is I think he's been pretty much everything as advertised. To me, he's been the best player in the Pac-12 this year. Just such a load on offense and has so many different ways of, scoring. Really, fluid. Even on defensively, people talk about his rim protection and his lack of awareness, but he moves so well and he takes up so much space there. Also, he's been a great rebounder too. And to me, he's the guy I have number one on my draft board right now. And I know the site has the same thing, NBADraft.net.
Shout out.
A lot of other draft people seem to have him one also. The next most popular guy is probably Luka Doncic, and then Marvin Bagley Jr. And, of course, Trae Young's fantastic freshman year has put him into the conversation also. But, it's not all said and done. He just looks like a guy who, 7'1", 260, runs the floor spectacularly well, has a lot of potential as a shooter. He's a guy who could end up being an absolute stud. I think frame-wise and athleticism-wise and with some of his skill set, it's kind of reminiscent of Joel Embiid, except he was further along, at least offensively, than Joel was at this point. Defensively, Joel was a special rim protector and just seemed to have great instinct there. It'll be about him kind of refining as a passer as well, and then just how badly he wants it. But he seemed to be really competitive so far also. So, he plays on a team with a lot of ball-dominant guards, and he's just still managed to get his and keep Arizona at the top of the Pac-12. So I've been very impressed with him this year. What are your thoughts, Sean? I'm guessing
in terms of number one pick, I'll have to save that for our next podcast when we
yeah,
do
yeah,
an intensive NBA draft kind of preview and dissection. But yeah, I mean, Ayton, you know, he's a physical freak that was able to put on a lot of strength going into college and has, I would say, increased kind of his competitive level, which I think was a question coming in. But I remember I got to first watch him play. He was still in prep school in San Diego and a sophomore, saw him play in Florida. And I mean, the minute you watched him run the floor, you just said, that's a 2018 number one draft pick, even though it was 3-4 years down the road. So, you know, he's been playing really well at Arizona. I know they had a loss to UCLA this week, but I think he's definitely in contention. And, you know, I think there's a lot of guys that could be in contention. And, you know, one guy, Michael Porter, who you guys have going number three, unfortunately hasn't played at all this year. You know, and the crazy thing is, if, you know, obviously his dad, you know, that's the reason he's at Missouri. But, you know, going back to the AAU days, him and Trae Young were on the same team. And for a while they talked about doing a package deal. But then kind of each player went to their, I'd say, I guess, local schools. But that could have been a fun duo to watch if they had ended up at the same school and Porter had been healthy. But definitely a lot of guys to kind of dissect from a draft standpoint, and most of them are really freshmen, besides for Luka, who is basically the same age but just dominating European basketball, which is kind of mm-hmm. unheard of for somebody his age. So I don't know. We'll have, next time we'll just kind of do a fun NBA draft one as the season kind of progresses.
Would love to. That sounds great. But okay. Yeah, I've been really impressed with Ayton. But absolutely, there's a lot of competition for that top spot in the draft this year.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your Oregon boys this week. And once again, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast for the third time and sharing your thoughts and insights.
Anytime, Sean. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, have a great week of basketball games.
Sounds good. Well, for all of the listeners, thank you for listening. And I would ask, if you did enjoy the show, just to head over to the iTunes page and leave a review or a rating. But until the next episode, talk to you guys later.